D. James Kennedy Ministries presents Truths That Transform.
Faithful fathers have an impact and an importance which is vastly greater than anybody imagined.
We create values. We are not zombies. We do not suck values from others. We create values.
This is Truths That Transform.
Thank you for joining us on Truths That Transform, a viewer-supported program. I am Frank Wright, president of D. James Kennedy Ministries, and I invite you to visit our ministry website at djameskennedy.org, where you can find a deep library of excellent video, audio, digital, and print resources. Visit us at djameskennedy.org. This year, America has witnessed one of the most interesting election seasons in her history. A self-described socialist has made a very credible run for one of the major parties' presidential nominations with fervent support from many young people. And it seems more and more evident that both major political parties have embraced the assumption that it's the government's job to provide significant goods and services to the people. What's needed is a recapturing of a biblical view on these issues. To get that, I recently sat down and talked with Dr. Al Mohler, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Because of the early church's persecution and its need to share its goods to survive, many people have argued that the Bible teaches socialism. Is that legit?
Well, first of all, when we look to the Bible, we don't see a detailed economic system. What we do see are biblical principles, but those principles don't fit socialism. Mm-hmm. And by the way, when you talk about socialism in the early church, first of all, we're not talking about the early church and the government. We're talking about the early church, and we're talking about the responsibility of brothers and sisters in Christ to take care of one another. That, of course, is our Christian responsibility. That's not socialism. The socialism in terms of a system of economics looks to the government to fulfill those functions, and that's a very different thing.
The Ten Commandments speaks of that, right? I mean, you can't steal something that doesn't belong to someone else, so private property is set forth.
Well, in the Bible, you've got several economic principles. You've got the fact that we are to honor labor, we are to match labor with reward, we are to honor investment. Jesus himself, and even in the parable, spoke about that. We're to honor thrift, and we are to honor the institutions of society, such as the integrity of marriage and the family, that lead to human flourishing and economic flourishing for all. So there are some very basic principles there. And as you say, socialism violates one of the most basic rules, which is you can't steal from someone else, which reminds me of one of my heroes, actually a heroine in this case, Margaret Thatcher, yes, who said famously that the problem with socialism is that sooner or later you run out of somebody else's money to spend.
That's right. That's such a great line. Socialism has a definition, and the definition tends to involve the ownership of, you know, the means of production, at least some of it, in a society. But we used to, if you brought out the S word and labeled someone as a socialist, even 20 years ago, it was the end of their political career. Not so today. Was Mitt Romney right when he said that the 47% that's getting transfer payments from the federal government means there's a de facto socialism already in place?
Well, I think you can argue that there's been some form of socialism in terms of an evolving and developing welfare state ever since the 1960s in particular. But socialism, I would say, is defined in terms of two things. First of all, state ownership and state control. We don't have a socialism in terms of state ownership at this point. More and more of the American people are directly dependent upon income that is coming from the federal government or eventually from the state in some form. By the way, socialism never is able to maintain stability where the evangelical gospel has very solid foundations and public presence. So there's no accident that socialism in its European experiment came really in the aftermath of a secularization that took place. And if you no longer believe in a worldview in which God is the creator of the earth and the giver of all things and the providential sovereign Lord who rules over history, then the state has to be the only quasi-omnipotent, omniscient power you recognize, and you have to invest your hopes in the state. You know, back during the height of the Cold War, there were some ex-communists who wrote a book. They've been ardently committed to communism, but they saw its failure. They saw the Stalin show trials. They saw the absolute failure of socialism to deliver on its promises. Mm-hmm. And they wrote a book together, and the title of it says everything. The title of the book was The God That Failed. The God of socialism always fails, as every idol fails. But it is interesting that we have so many people who are ready to bow down to that idol for what appears to be a very interesting political moment.
Socialism tries to draw all power, as most government does, unto itself, and will brook no opposing authority, and yet the church stands in opposition in many ways. What's the future look like for us?
You know, I think we have to look at the chilling precedent of the socialist compacts and socialist governments in Western Europe. Because in many of those nations, you either have a very oppressive secularism, or you have the government more or less co-opt the church the same way it co-opts other sectors of the society. And so in some of these places, you actually have the church receiving funding from the state.
Yeah.
And there is nothing that kills gospel preaching any faster than having Caesar pay for the church.
Yeah.
And so we have to watch that. We also have to understand that a society that is moving in that direction is not a society that is moving in the direction of what the Christian church teaches about individual liberty, about the importance of labor, about the honor and dignity of investment and the return of profit on investment and the liberty and the flourishing that comes to the human society by the fact that God has set us loose. You know, Genesis 1:28 is our economic manifesto. It's our understanding of our purpose in life. Go multiply, be fruitful, fill the earth, take dominion over the earth. And that's what we're called to do. Socialism says, no, we are the dominion. And there's such a direct conflict there. You just are looking at a conflict of worldviews that's massive.
Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, the fathers of modern socialism, were both rank atheists. And the socialism of these latter days ultimately proceeds from a naturalistic evolutionary view of man, seeing him as basically good and getting better. And such atheism, which has done untold damage over the past century, has a strong root in fatherlessness. On this Father's Day, we share an important portion of Dr. D. James Kennedy's message, Faithful Fathers.
Well, dads, this is your day, Father's Day. And what is the state of fatherhood in modern America today? Well, one lady about 23 years ago put it like this. Women need a man like a fish needs a bicycle. That's what she said. That's what Gloria Steinem, one of the leading gurus of the feminist movement, said. Women need a man like a fish needs a bicycle. And so, men, fathers, it seems that we are obsolete. We are unneeded. And there has been a huge denigration of fatherhood and maleness in our country in the last quarter century. And the social scientists of our country have been doing studies for the last quarter century that have revealed some rather startling things. One writer put it this way, the most important discovery and the most important ingredient for making American culture what it was intended to be is a father in the home. Now that might surprise many people, but gentlemen, it is being discovered that you are not obsolete. In fact, you are absolutely crucial to the well-being of the family, the children, and the nation. This is the result of the various studies that have been made by the social scientists in the last 25 years. And this includes virtually every aspect of human life, beginning, of course, with the matter of schooling. What do we discover? We discover that the fewer years they spend with a father, the fewer years they complete in school. Another study by Harvard Educational Review discovered that in father-absent homes, that students score dramatically lower on college entrance exams and are 150% more likely to be unemployed. Yes, those and other studies indicate that children do much worse in school if there is not a father in the home. Not only is that true of school, but it's true of life in general. Children that grow up in fatherless homes are much more likely to be involved in drugs, in alcohol. The girls are much more likely to become pregnant out of wedlock, have children out of wedlock. They are even going to live shorter lives. On average, children growing up in broken homes lived 4 years shorter lives. They don't bounce back, as has been said. The same thing is true about crime. The evidence is that children growing up in fatherless homes are much more likely to be involved in crime. To wit, the evidence shows that 73% of adolescent murderers come from fatherless homes. Now, fatherless homes make up a minority of the homes in this country, and yet 73% of the adolescent murderers come from such homes. 80% of rapists who were evaluated as raping out of anger and rage came from father-absent homes. 90% of adolescent repeat arsonists lived without fathers. 65% of juvenile prisoners were brought up without dads. The Journal of Research in Crime and Delinquency reports that the more absent the father, the higher rates of violent crimes. Yes, gentlemen, you make a very critical difference, not only to the family, but also to the society as well. This also is true when it comes to sexual identity. It has long been known that one of the principal causes of male homosexuality is either the absence of the father or the presence of an abusive father. And so this is seen to be the cause of one of the great social problems of our day, the rise of homosexuality, the gay agenda pushing itself ever farther and farther, now working toward marriage. Furthermore, the American Psychological Association, which was pressured to take homosexuality off their list of mental disorders a quarter of a century ago, is now beginning to be pressured to take adult child sex off of its list of mental disorders as something perfectly natural. First the culture, and then the children. And they just keep on pushing. Yes, dads, you do make a difference. It's true not only of schooling, of life in general, of homosexual or sexual identity. It's also true even of belief, or the lack of it. Dr. Paul Vitz, one of the nation's best-known psychologists, professor of psychology at New York University, an alma mater, subjects the apostles of atheism, the leaders of modern atheism, to the same psychological analysis with which they attempted to debunk religious belief. The psychological source of their militant atheism, he shows, was the absence of a good father. You too can bring up Nietzsche, Sartre, Camus. All you have to do is leave home. And this, of course, is not the only source of atheism, nor is it inevitably the source, but it is the major source, and he looks at the 15 most influential atheists of the last four centuries and finds that in every case, there was either an absent father, a dead father, or a completely incompetent father. Yes, indeed, my friends, an absentee or brutish father, an abusive father, a weak father, has an enormous impact upon the children. And scientists have discovered that you gentlemen, as godly fathers, as faithful fathers, have an impact and an importance which is vastly greater than anybody imagined. Yes, it seems that fish need bicycles, doesn't it?
It seems that in recent years, our culture has fallen into insanity. Attempts at social engineering have brought disaster, whether through the redefinition of marriage and the destruction of the family, government control of more and more sectors of the economy, or basic human sexuality. Socialism, at its root, is an attempt to usurp God and refashion humanity. And like all attempts to rebel against God's word, it leads to destruction. Meet Kai Chen, who has seen firsthand the results of government attempting to play God.
Kai Chen is a Chinese immigrant to America.
Well, I was born in Beijing 1953. That's right after the communist government took over in 1949. My parents worked for the Chinese customs before the communist takeover.
After establishing itself, the government began exiling workers with certain backgrounds into the countryside. Kai Chen's family was among them.
But after they established themselves, they started persecution. After they think, now we can run the government now. Now we can run this agency. The persecution started.
In the late 1950s, Chairman Mao launched his so-called Great Leap Forward. It resulted in a massive famine that killed millions.
It's like communism, socialism, collectivism, these things, they want to command the nature. You see that? That very mistake caused the famine. They say, I'm smarter than God, you see. I can command this land to produce that much, okay? When the land does not produce that much, they create the figures to cheat. Or they collect from your home to try to fill their figures. And then result is in the countryside, there's a starvation, a huge starvation for 3 years. And people die like drop like flies, and cannibalism return in the countryside. And people eat their children, but they can't, some people they don't have the heart to eat their own children. They exchange it with their neighbors and eat their children. People die, they still can be used. You can bury them in the land as a fertilizer. Mao said that.
Though the famine killed tens of millions, Kai Chen and his family survived. While working in the countryside, he practiced playing basketball and ultimately was recruited onto the Chinese national team.
In China, I was a big star, traveled everywhere in the world, and representing China, got all the benefits and all that stuff. I was not happy. I was dying inside. My basketball was hijacked by a government of evil. At that time, I met a exchange student, my wife, Susan. After about a couple years, we got married in 1981. I came here, I was happy. For the first time, I feel happy. Happiness, and penniless, I came here. I work, in a fast food, and meanwhile attend adult school to learn English.
Kai Chen went on to earn a political science degree from UCLA and is now a successful businessman who extols the benefits of America and its free enterprise system.
It's founded for the free souls like me. Like we come here and we want to establish ourselves. We create values. We are not zombies. We do not suck values from others. We create values. Now I live in this house. It's a beautiful house. I didn't steal. I didn't rob. I didn't do anything bad. I saw opportunity. I create value. I enjoy my life. That's what it is. That's what America is about. America. You don't even know what this country means anymore. You have lost it. And you have lost it because you don't read, the Constitution or Declaration of Independence anymore. I was born Chinese, but I chose to be American. I chose to be American because I chose to be free.
Despite the abundance of evidence that socialism leads to disaster, especially when combined with a powerful government, growing numbers of Americans seemingly approve of it. Politicians on both sides of the aisle seem to support expanding government control of huge portions of the economy. But a growing entitlement state is a recipe for impending calamity. Yet, in this election year, hardly anyone is talking about shrinking government control. What is a Christian to do? Well, my friend Jennifer Kennedy Cassidy is here with two new resources to help you. Jennifer, welcome.
Thanks, Frank. Just look at our nation. Increasing socialism, rampant gender confusion, the squelching of religious liberty, and executive overreach from a presidency that's become more like a monarchy. America is descending into insanity, and it's time to put a stop to it. If Christians who have access to God's truth don't stand up and say enough, who will? We have an important new book from Frank Wright that will help you understand how we got here and what's at stake. It's called The Road Back to Sanity, Finding Our Way Home from Cultural Delusion. Frank takes an incisive look at four major roadways in our cultural journey where sanity needs to be restored. The so-called separation of church and state, executive overreach, socialism, and gender identity. This is a book every Christian who's concerned about the state of our nation needs to read. And we'll send it to you as our thanks for your generous donation to the ongoing work of this ministry. And we'll also include the two DVD or two CD set, Wake Up America, from my father, Dr. D. James Kennedy, calling us to return to God. Simply write to us at Box 6084, Albert Lea, Minnesota, 56007, or call toll-free 877-962-7677, or go online at djameskennedy.org. Our fiscal year ends at the close of June, so we need to hear from you right away so that we can meet our financial obligations and launch into this election season with four new TV specials we plan to produce on the four topics covered in Frank's book: socialism, executive overreach, the so-called separation of church and state, and gender identity. Help us get the biblical truth out on the most pressing issues of the day so they won't be ignored during this election. And if you contact us right away, your donation will be effectively doubled for a limited time. Some of you can give $50, some can give $100 or even $1,000. Because some great friends of this ministry have established the $150,000 matching challenge, whatever you give will be matched up to the $150,000. So please don't delay. As our thanks, we'll send you Frank Wright's new book, The Road Back to Sanity, as well as the two DVD or two CD series from my dad called Wake Up America. Simply write to us at Box 6084, Albert Lea, Minnesota, 56007, or call toll-free 877-962-7677, or go online at djameskennedy.org.
In the past few months, the island nation of Cuba has become a popular tourist destination after President Obama issued an executive order lifting travel restrictions to the communist country. The president visited with Cuban President Raul Castro, brother of Fidel, and posed for photographers in front of an enormous image of the thug revolutionary Che Guevara. Already, Cuba has become a destination for American celebrities who say they want to get to Cuba before it's quote-unquote ruined. They see the 1950s cars and crumbling buildings as quaintly authentic, as if they were merely some hipster fashion choices. But in reality, Cuba has 1950s cars and a crumbling infrastructure because the communist Castro government choked off economic development. Their communistic policies doomed the nation. The average salary is about $20 per month. Only people spoiled by the luxuries afforded in a free enterprise system could see such poverty and such deprivation as charming backdrops for tourism. As Cuban descended actress Natalie Morales recently wrote, "What exactly do you think will ruin Cuba? Running water? Available food? Freedom of speech? Uncontrolled media and internet? Access to proper health care?" she said. In reality, the free market, which takes a biblical view of humanity seriously, leverages fallen human nature by requiring people to provide value in exchange for receiving value. While imperfect at best, the free market always delivers tremendous economic and social benefit. Meanwhile, a communistic system, one asserting that government can bring about utopia by controlling and providing for the people, actually brings grinding poverty and a stifling lack of liberty. Here's hoping that the current Cuba will be ruined and that those shameful ruins will give birth to the long-oppressed Cuban people and that they will rise to enjoy the same opportunities and freedoms their celebrity visitors now possess. I'm Frank Wright. Thanks for joining us on this edition of Truths That Transform. We'll see you next time.
Next week on Truths That Transform.
Down through the centuries, churches have been the ones who have moved to get rid of most of the great evils of our world.
Democracy doesn't seem to work fast enough for this administration, so authoritarianism is their line for the day, so they're going to try tyranny on the state.
That's next week. Today's program is available on DVD for your gift to this ministry of any amount. Please call, write, or log on to our website today. This has been a production of D. James Kennedy Ministries.